Yo, welcome to another episode of Candid Candor with Jay and January, where we like to talk about what we want to talk about.
That's right, love. And today we're going to talk about the important topic of race again. So stay tuned and enjoy. Well, what's up, guys? We're back in the closet, and you're not gonna say we back in this closet?
No, I feel like that joke was kind of old now.
I guess I ruined it. But yeah, it's been a emotional week or so, huh? Like, it's just been an emotional roller coaster, don't you think?
It really has. There's been a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings with a lot of different people. Outside of COVID.
I mean, is COVID still here? Like, I don't even know if COVID's still a thing anymore.
COVID is definitely still a thing.
Okay. I would hope so. We got multiple masks now, so.
Yeah.
We're prepared for COVID.
We're making a statement.
We're making a statement, that's right. But, I mean, seriously, it really has been an emotional couple of weeks. A lot of things have happened, you know. Everybody knows that the events that happened, and so we just want to talk about it. So, babe, would you, want to kick us off a little bit?
Sure. Well, outside of COVID, we all know that that's happened. Shelter at home and all those things. Numbers still climbing. But outside of that, there was also, we've talked about this a little bit, the Ahmaud Arbery incident. A black man was gunned down. And then recently, there was George Floyd, where he was murdered by several police officers. And yeah, and now in Birmingham, Alabama, we've had, some peaceful protests, some great marches, just some really great, great times here dealing with the realm of, racial injustices and finally looking towards evolving from the racial inequalities that we experience. But along with that, there is also like an incidence of rioting and vandalism in downtown Birmingham. And so that's like a brief synopsis of, kind of nationally, but also locally about what's been going on recently. And so that's just kind of along the lines of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, for sure. And I believe, right after the George Floyd video broke, we were just full of emotion. Like, we didn't know. I couldn't formulate how I felt. Like, I knew I was angry, and I knew I was, fatigued and tired. It's kind of the same feelings I had after the Ahmaud Arbery incident. But, I mean, I remember, I think it happened, and we were supposed to record, like, the day after or 2 days after, and we never can get it going. Like, we just couldn't get traction. We couldn't get our thoughts formulated. We're full of emotions and, didn't think it was kind of wise to kind of record those emotions. And so now we feel like we can formulate things. And one of the cool parts about when this is what we're going to talk about a good bit is the reaction of and like what's happening now in our world and kind of in just the world all around us is a lot of things that are happening are what we talked about on our first race podcast. There's so many conversations being had. And I guess if you can pull a positive out of a tragedy like this, that's one thing that I could say has been positive is, so many people are asking questions. So many people are reaching out. I was telling January yesterday, the days of having a 3-minute phone conversation are almost over. Like, there's questions. People are listening. People want to know, how can we be better? What can I do to be better? And that's been really just good to feel and good to hear. You see what I mean?
Yeah. There's, like Jay said, that we've had a lot of different conversations with a lot of different friends and maybe even some like not friends, but it's all been really good and educational. And I think the most important part about this all that there's an overwhelming amount of people who are just willing to sit and listen to your experiences and your pains and, you know, where you've came from and how you've developed this worldview on all sides. And I think a great word for that is empathy.
Yeah.
Where there's just been an abundance of empathy where people can just sit in each other's emotions and in each other's pains and not formulate judgments, but know that their feelings are valid.
Yeah, and within those conversations, I feel like we have learned a common theme for a lot of them. Like a lot of times our white friends are, you know, struggling with the same things. Like they just don't understand kind of the same things. And one of the things that I've noticed is the different like processing, the different types of processing people have after they see a tragedy like that. And so for me and you, I'm an external processor. And so because of that, I would love to, you know, sit with people, talk to people. I just need to talk to somebody. Once I talk to somebody, I can move on from just about anything, or not really move on. I get peace in my spirit about just about anything. Once I talk to somebody and then, you know, I spend time with the Lord. Whereas for you, you're more of an internal processor. And I mean, I don't know what that world is actually like. So can you actually explain what that is?
Yeah, I just like to sit on things and meditate on things and just not really, like, put it out there yet. Like, I'm still working on identifying my emotions. And I think that's just a large part of what it means to be an internal processor. And like I've said before, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram, so I struggle with identifying like the feelings and emotions that I have. So I have to do some deep internal like searching to figure out exactly what I'm feeling, where it's coming from, why do I feel like this, what wound is this coming from, and really try and figure it out and how it correlates to the now. And so that's just a brief synopsis of what it's like to be an internal processor.
Yeah, and they're probably thinking, y'all are probably thinking as listeners, like, why'd they even go that route? Well, I'm going to tie it in here. Because one piece of advice I've been giving my white friends that are, you know, trying to reach out to people, the black people in their community or the black people they're in relationship with, and even us at times, is you have to be okay with letting people process things.
Yeah.
So, like, people have emotions. And when we see things like that, and we see, even when we see rioting, even when we see, you know, tweets from our president, tweets from like people that are on the other side, people, it's okay to have emotions. Like emotions, everybody has emotions. It's okay to have those, especially in times like this, because people need to, you know, process how they actually feel. Like they can't get over how they feel until they process how they feel. And one of the worst things you can do is to come in and feel like you have an answer. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's one thing I want to praise our friends for is a lot of times in this last couple of weeks, they've called and just asked us how we feel. Mm-hmm. How we feel. Is that the right English
word? How we feel.
How we feel. Yeah. How we feel. I'm a math guy, sorry. But how we feel. And because of that, you know, we feel comfortable letting them know how we feel, and we know they're not going to try to tell us how to feel.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they're our friends,
yeah,
too.
But, I mean, that's just good advice for anybody. It's just like when you're walking someone through a tough time or when you're walking someone through, and it's very easy for us in black culture to feel like people are trying to make us feel a certain way because we assimilate so well. And so what I mean by that is just like we're so used to assimilating into whatever, you know, white culture wants us to do that if a white person comes on and tries to tell me how they think I should feel, I may not want to feel that way, but I feel like I should feel that way.
Yeah, so you can fit in with whatever culture that you're in at the moment.
Yeah, I feel like that's just, I mean, that's not right by any means, but I feel like that's just the way it is because we've been taught for so long that, you know, to make it, you have to assimilate. And so if someone's telling me that's how I should feel or even if they're telling me how they feel, I mean, this is going to sound kind of cruel, but like right now is not a time to really communicate how you feel as a white person. It's kind of a time to just listen and, you know, learn from and try, even though you can't put yourself in the shoes of a black person, just try to learn as much as you can And honestly, like, how you feel right now isn't what's at the forefront. Does that make sense? Or is that like, is that doesn't make sense?
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I still think that, I mean, their feelings are valid as well, though.
I'm not saying they're not valid. I'm just saying they're not, like, in the forefront of what's going on.
I mean, yeah. I still feel like they need space as well to process. Because, I mean, for a lot of people that we know, they're going through, like, they grew up with this mentality. So they're having to also backtrack and think about, you know, well, my parents taught me this, but clearly that's not the right thing. And so they're having to undo years and years and years of just, I don't even want to say negative thinking, just alternative thinking, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it's on all levels, like everyone from all sides, we just have a duty to be able to be willing to do the work and empathize with people from all sides. Because I mean, I have friends who are from, like I said, I'm from Enterprise, Alabama. That's like the deep South. Like I've friends who were really raised in a culture steeped in racism, you know, versus, you know, my black friends who, well, I guess my husband who was raised in Atlanta, where it was just way more diverse. And so I think we just have to do due diligence, and have grace on everyone on each side so that we can all approach the table with an open heart and full of grace and know that we all come from different sides, but we all have to have willing hearts to get better together.
Yeah, I'm actually glad that you said, first off, that was brilliant. Like I shouldn't have said that their feelings aren't valid. I was more thinking on the lines of, you know, in the George Floyd situation particularly, but I think what you said is beautiful. You said it beautifully that, like, no, they're having to get over things too now. Another thing that, like, we have seen as a reoccurrence is I feel like as a white person, you don't have to approach every conversation with the black person and apologize on behalf of your race.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, we don't blame you for being born white. Like, that was just like, and it's a true thing. Like, we don't, I feel like, and we get what you're trying to say. Like, we get, like, you are sorry. I get it. Like, you do apologize. But in reality, like, as black people, we don't hold you being born white against you.
No.
I mean, like, even when, like, you know, that was just something you born into. We just want white people to recognize that because you were born white and other people like us were born black, you just started off with a little bit of a head start more than us. I shared a video on my Instagram. Y'all should follow my Instagram. That that illustrates that beautifully. It's the video of, you know, the kids on the football field and the guy, they're racing for $100, and he asked them a couple questions. And the questions were like, all right, you step two steps forward if you have two parents in your home. You step two steps forward if you had a tutor growing up. You step two steps forward if you got a private education. And he asked all these questions, and then obviously there's five or six guys in the front of the line who are three steps away from the $100 bill. And then there's more people of color, you know, the further back you get at the starting line. And he makes a statement to say, like, this is the illustration of life. And, you know, I think now a lot of times we use the term privilege. And me and January went back and forth about this before. And I was like, I feel like when you say white privilege, people think you're, like, kind of attacking them. Does that make sense? Like, attacking them.
Yeah.
And, like, they grew up with privilege. They didn't have any struggles. No, we all had struggles. White, black, orange, brown, green. Like, we all had struggles. I think that term, I said January, I wish I could think of another term to use, because I don't even like that we use that term. But I do believe that what that term means is just recognizing that you had a head start and that things aren't, we don't come into this world with an equal start line. That doesn't mean, and that's not an attack on you. Like, you wasn't born, so don't take it personal when someone says that term. Like, we can't hold it against you that you were born white. we just need you to recognize that, because we know it on our end as Black people, like, we know that we got to work twice as hard sometimes, but we just need you to recognize as a white person that things aren't equal. And right now, I can say, and January can speak to this too, like, people have opened their ears to that. And like, I had a conversation with the lady yesterday who was telling me, like, she's experienced and noticed her privilege more in the last 2 weeks than she ever would have thought in her whole life. So that means conversations are being had and people are, you know, becoming aware. So that's all we can really hope for.
Yeah, and it's so eye-opening for a lot of white people that we know of who just didn't have any recollection, or they didn't even know this existed, yeah. Or maybe, you know, they were on the defense about it, you know, say a year ago. But now that just so many people are speaking up and speaking out, like, because so many people are standing and thinking like very deeply about it and how, you know, this Head Start affects them. And so I think it's an imperative conversation that we as a culture need to continue to have, because there are just so many people who, you know, don't get those head starts. Mm-hmm. I mean, my mom, she's from a third world country. She's from Cambodia, and she came to America not knowing English. She came to the U.S. as a refugee. She for sure was behind the curve, and she had to work her butt off to work hard and make something of herself. I mean, I'm not saying that to negate anybody else's hard work. I'm just saying she already came in at a disadvantage. And my dad is also from, you know, the South as well. And he's an African-American male, and he's worked hard all of his life. And again, not to negate anybody's hard work, but I do truly believe that we all start off at a different starting line. And
I wish there was a word that we can use as different. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about this for multiple days. We even asked our white neighbor if there's a word that was better, and she couldn't think of one either. But so two things we talked about so far, you know, you don't feel like you have to apologize for your entire race. Like, you run your race. And that's a bad one, because I said race and race. You run your life story. And, like, don't feel like, don't take white privilege as an attack on you. We're not saying you're a privileged white person. We're saying that, you know, you just got a head start. And we need you to recognize that. Another thing I wanted to talk about, and this was a big topic in Birmingham, was, you know, was it Monday? It was Monday. There was a Confederate monument that mm-hmm. was brought down. And a lot of people, not so many people, actually have not talked to anybody that felt this way. But we did notice, I did that little Cardinal Sin thing during a Facebook Live video. I got into the comments.
Looked at the comments.
And, you know, I'm a...
Dun, dun, dun.
I can get deep in comments. I actually looked in the comments. I saw one of my friends get on the video and text her and told her not to look at the comments. And so, but I looked at the comments, and there's a lot of people that, you know, were upset about that Confederate monument coming down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it made me think about a couple of years ago, we have a friend in South Carolina, and they had the same thing. Remember when Mike and, mm-hmm. you know, they were having the Confederate monuments come down, and it was a big deal. And the only thing I want to say about that is, you know, if you think about it, one, the Confederacy lost. So, like, we don't make monuments for people, things that lose. Like, that's not something we do in the world. And two, like, if you go back in history, and if my friend Fern is listening, or my friend Terry, they're going to call me and love that I put a history lesson in this thing. But if you go back in history, you know, the Confederacy, and it's not even history, it's kind of common sense. The Confederacy stood for racism. They fought the Union. The Union won. The Confederates, you know, believed in racism. So racism should have died, or slavery died with the Confederacy. So anytime a black person sees a monument of the Confederacy, they automatically think racism.
Yeah.
And because that's the symbol, the Confederacy was the symbol of racism. So in order to conserve, we can get really deep into all of this with Alabama laws and all that jazz. Not really going to get into that right now. But in order, the effort that we have in the South to conserve Confederate monuments, show me the effort that we have to conserve racism.
Yeah.
And until, you know, we lose a grip on things of the past, it's going to be twice as hard in the South to continue to move forward. Because then people will say things like, well, it's just a statue. Well, no, it's not just a statue, because it's a reminder of something over and over that we still have a racism problem.
Yeah.
Because there's still monuments
during
to
that time, like, we were, the African American community was super oppressed.
Yeah.
So anytime that we see like a Confederate monument, or I don't know if you've ever driven from Birmingham to Atlanta, but there's, you know, that Confederate store.
It's called the Dixie store. Yeah. Like, and it's like Confederate flags everywhere. And it's like, all right, we're not going to stop there. But like, I mean,
it just, it constantly reminds, like, us, and you can probably say this to any Black person, just how oppressed we were as African Americans, and how our life was not equal to the white man's life during that time.
Yeah. And so anytime you see a monument of that, and then, like, you know, like I said, I got into, you know, I did the cardinal rule of not to do was to look at the comments, and there was a lot of, like, pronouns like us and they, and like that showed me that, like, we still have a long way to go in this world. Even though, like, you know, there's been Birmingham. I will say this. Birmingham, the city of Birmingham, has been amazing when it comes to, you know, the peaceful protests. We had rioters, but, like, that wasn't the people that live here. We had a beautiful, like, protest scene of all demographics, all races, all religions. It was just like a beautiful thing to watch. And like I said, they took a Confederate monument down. And so, like, we're taking steps in the right direction, but we still have a long way to go. And until that us and they mentality goes away, racism gonna forever be a problem.
Yeah. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, we're all in this together, and my hope and my prayer is that people from all sides can see that throughout history, just all people have not been created equally. Like, we realize that, we own that, but now how are we going to move forward to progress? How are we going to, you know, allow for, you know, say when Jay and I have children in the future, how are we going to have them feel like an equal to, you know, their white counterpart?
Yeah. So, like, if you, because we've been talking about that a lot lately, because most of the people that know us personally know I can't wait to have children. And so, like, but during this time, I have really thought about, like, our future children and, like, in this world, like, how am I going to raise a, you know, a Black son or daughter in this world, and one, educate them of all these things, but two, you know, have sanity and not have parental paranoia all the time. But to kind of piggyback what you said about, like, this country and the history of this country, we talk a lot. I get hung up on things on words, and we talked about, like, the Constitution, and how it says, you know, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, is that right?
Yeah, you're more smart. Perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility.
That's good.
Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare.
Only word I need is perfect. Okay. So when someone wrote that, you know, our founding fathers of America, when they wrote that, there was only rights for one demographic of people, and that was white males, right? And so, like, at some point, people thought that was a perfect union. Was white males, right? And so, like, when we talk about, you know, not to throw shots at anybody, but, like, to make things great again, well, there was never great for one demographic of people. It was only great for one demographic of people at one time. Mm-hmm. It's never been great for any other demographic of people. And so that vocabulary is, you know, just like the us and they. Like, for us, the us of being, you know, that demographic, it was great. But for the they, it's never been great. And as long as we continue to have those things that show that time period, we're never going to be able to move forward. So I wasn't one of the people trying to tear down the monument. I mean, I know somebody that was. We ain't going to call her out on this podcast. But I was, you know, I watched it, and it was very anticlimactic, though. But, like,
it's a very large monument.
Very large monument.
It took several hours.
Yeah. But we got, because, you know, our city, our great city, you know, brought it down, And then the people of the city paid the fine for it. So that, I mean, there's like, there is a push going forward. And like I said, we're not where we want to be, but we're headed to the right direction, which is great.
I definitely believe that this moment that we're in right now is a moment. It's going to be a catalytic moment.
Yeah.
For not only Birmingham, but also I think the nation, in terms of people recognizing just the struggles of other people, being a human and recognizing that we all go through things, but we need each other to move forward. We need each other's support. Like, all Black people cannot only support the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
We need Black people. We need white people. We need Asians. I mean, we need people from all spectrums of the rainbow to be able to help us in this movement.
Yeah, and another thing we wanted to address, this is going to be a little longer than our normal one, sorry. We gave you a week break, so we can talk a little longer. But, you know, a lot of times you hear Black Lives Matter and the return to that is what, January?
All lives matter,
right? And we agree, all lives matter. All lives should matter. I mean, we're Christian. We believe, we are very heavy in our faith. We know what the word says. But for this moment right now, we can say all lives matter, but do all lives matter the same is the question. And so, like, right now in the climate of our world, and honestly, since Black people were brought over here on ships, like, Black lives have not mattered the same as white lives. I mean, the numbers show it. And so we're not saying all lives don't matter. We're just saying we're focusing on the Black lives that matter, because they don't matter as much as all the other lives in this moment or at any point in history.
Yeah.
And so, like, when you respond with all lives matter, it's pretty much saying, like, you don't believe there's a disproportionate, you know, rate at which Black lives are being taken. And so then you just can't count.
Yeah.
Like, it's what it is.
It feels like our struggle is negated when the rebuttal of all lives matter. Like,
yeah,
on paper, all lives do matter, but there's been a history of racial injustices since the genesis of Black people coming to the States, or what we call the United States right now. Like Jay has said, it hasn't been equal at all for African-American people, for really any minorities. We can go back to, I don't know, Asian-Americans.
I love me some Asians.
You do like Asians. I mean, we can go back to all sorts of different races who've came to America to seek a better life. It hasn't been equal for them either.
The best and easy example I've heard about this, and this is, I don't even know who posted this on Instagram, but it was amazing. I don't even know if you've seen it, but it's they said, like, when someone says Black Lives Matter and someone rebuttals with no, all lives matter, it's like you're in a neighborhood and one house catches on fire, and you call the fire department, and the fire department sprays water on every house.
Yeah.
It's like, the one house is what's important right now, that we're trying to save this one house.
Mm-hmm.
But because everybody thinks their house matters, we got to spray everybody's house just in case it may catch on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so I thought that was just brilliant, because it's saying, no, we're not saying all lives don't matter. No, that's not what we said. We're just saying at this moment, for this cause, Black and brown people are dying at the hands of the police, and we want to focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this can sound like I'm being quite a morbid, but during the Holocaust, when Jewish people were being persecuted, you think if we're in those times, we would talk about how everybody else's life mattered? No, we would talk about how we need to save the Jewish people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's the same concept. It's just people don't, for some reason, people don't want to give that, you know, I guess, specificity when it comes to white and black.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's just like, no, if Black people try to say their lives, anything like special to them, it has to be special for everybody. But, like, it's not like this is like an award or anything. Like, we don't want to be doing a Black Lives Matter movement. Like, we don't want the shine to be on Black Lives Matter. Like, that's just terrible that we have to do this. But I think when you rebuttal all lives matter, like January said, it kind of, like, it kind of like says we're not being heard in this moment. Like, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think just to echo what we talked about on our last podcast about races, I think all this is because, like, why there's such a strong rebuttal from it is because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable to recognize that some people have struggled a lot more and they haven't had as much as a leg up as other people in this world. And I think that's one of the main roots of it, is just talking about race is uncomfortable. But I mean, I'm determined to not allow it to be uncomfortable in, like, the way that I live, the way that I carry myself, the way that I have conversations. Like, we need these conversations to happen so we can continue to fight for equality, so we can continue to open ourselves up to let other people in and see what we're dealing with, see what we're struggling with or have struggled with in the past. And so they can fight for us too.
Yeah, and just like we talked about on our first, you know, race podcast, and like I said on the first race podcast, like, we're never, this isn't going to be the last race podcast. Like, it's honestly one of our favorite things to talk about. I mean, not necessarily in this context, because, you know, no one wants to talk about, you know, the reaction to someone losing their life or being murdered in the street. But, like, I do believe that the fix to all this is in communication, is in conversations, is, you know, both sides coming to the table and listening and talking, and, you know, for, you know, white people to listen and, you know, be willing to learn, and for black people to be willing to teach. Like, I just think that is the end all be all. And then take, well, I guess not the end all be all, because then take action on that. Teach your kids, you know, educate your kids. Your kids may be asking, you know, why are people protesting? Tell them. Like, you don't have to say, you don't have to be super graphic about it, but just tell them, you know, in this world, our world isn't perfect. You know, the Bible even tells us this world isn't perfect, but, you know, people, we have to stand up for people that don't have a voice for themselves. And so just tell your children that, educate your friends. Remember, January had this great line in our first podcast, like, if your circle looks like you, you need a better circle. Like, go get some more friends. Did I quote that right?
A bigger circle,
yeah.
But, I mean, essentially, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's, you still need a better one.
Better so. And a bigger one. So, I mean, we need to wrap this one up. It's the longest one we've had.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too. But I do want to say, in the light of all the things that are going on this week and last week and the things that come in the future, please just remember that when things seem dark and it seems like we're not making any progress, that's not necessarily true. We're making progress. People are having conversations. The reports are only the negative things. Like, people are learning and people are, you know, trying to be better. And that's all we can really ask for.
Yeah. I mean, there are better days ahead. But right now, we can only focus on what we can do in the now, which, like Jay said, is talking to people and educating yourself with books and, you know, podcasts or shows, and going out and donating to organizations that you believe in that can help in the cause, whether it's Black Lives Matter or the NAACP or whatever that looks like. Do your research and do the work and look and see how you can make a difference for whatever the things that you are blessed with.
Yeah. And last thing, your Instagram post means nothing if it stays on Instagram. If there's no feet to your Instagram post,
dang, Jay,
it means absolutely nothing.
That was tough.
Blackout Tuesday, whatever you want to do, whatever thing, the new thing they say do on Instagram, it means nothing if you're not having conversations and you're not learning and you're not changing your mindset on how you view people of different color and different races. So I think that's a good way to end it there.
Yeah, that's heavy.
Solid jab to the throat,
to the jugular. That hey, was, I mean,
we
I
appreciate guess. You guys listening.
Yeah, be sure to, you know, like our podcast. Be sure to subscribe and comment, and we love those little stars that you guys leave. That
yeah is, those stars be yeah, dope. And everybody always do five. I'm like,
for real?
I'm with that though. Like,
shout out to
all you peoples. If there's a way to figure out who all gave five stars, I would figure it out, but I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, but we do know the people who leave comments, so
that's right.
Leave those comments.
Yeah. Hey, Can I say we love you guys? Is that okay? I always almost end it that way. I'm a loving guy.
We really like you a lot.
We like you enough to let you listen to our podcast.
So thank you for listening. And yeah.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye. I should have did it.